Hi, this is Marco Liz.
Hey, we are Denzel Park.
Hi, this is Mark Knight from Torn Records, and you're checking out Act Like a DJ with LPR.
Hey guys, this is Stonebridge, and you're listening to Act Like a DJ with my boy LPR.
Right then, he's finally fed. He's finally off the phone. Please say, state your name for the listeners. Drum roll. Here we go.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Nine Toes.
Here with Nine Toes in beautiful Bali, full house in the W Sound Suite studio. Thanks so much for joining us, taking some time out of your busy schedule. I know you've been a busy boy. Tell everyone where you've been and what you're up to in Bali.
So I'm on a world tour right now. I started the tour in Kuala Lumpur 2 weeks ago, I think. Then I was here for 4 days in Bali because Bali is like my base for all Asia and Australia.
Not a bad base, is it really?
Yeah, exactly. And I have a lot of friends here, and I'm staying here in a villa of a friend of mine. He's, by the way, he's here sitting next to me. Che, yeah. Say hi, Che.
Hi, guys.
There we go.
And then I was in Australia. I played 3 shows there. It was Melbourne, Sydney, and Perth.
Nice. Any highlights from Australia?
Every show was different, but really cool. Met really nice people, and I think the craziest show was in Sydney, because a lot of friends. I met a lot of friends there from Germany, and it was really really funny. And then, but the nicest, coolest show, like the best energy, I think I had in Perth.
Nice.
At the Movement Party. It was a backyard party. It was really cool.
Was that in the daytime, was it?
No, it was from... They had to close down at 12, so I played from 10 till 12.
Oh, cool.
And then they had to close, but it was really nice, really cool. Cool atmosphere, nice, really, really warm atmosphere.
And then you were supposed to go to China, but you couldn't go?
Yeah, from there, I went to Bangkok. I played at Sing Sing Bangkok. It was a really nice party, really cool show, amazing club, really nice. Then I was supposed to go to Kunming, China, but then I had some troubles on the at the airport with the supervisor from Thai Airways, because he was not familiar with this 72 hours transit visa thing, and and he was like, no, you can fly, you can fly, so you can enter the plane. So I was arguing with him for like 1 hour, and then he was like, no, you don't fly. I was like, okay. So I booked the new ticket from Bangkok back to Denpasar. So,
and here we are.
I'm here, yeah.
It's not a bad way to have your trip diverted to getting back to Bali.
Exactly.
It's pretty cool, hey? So then, what are you doing in Bali now then? You're here for a few days and you've got a gig. Tell us a little bit about your gig this week.
Yes, so I'm here now for 12 days. And the thing is that the original date here in Bali was scheduled for the 14th of January on a Sunday. And but the problem was that the promoters, they were a little bit scared of doing it on a Sunday, because they had Friday, Saturday, like Ali Dapai was playing here, Guti was playing here, and then right. Luciano was playing here. So they were like, hey, maybe on a Sunday a lot of people will not go out because they're like completely done.
Partied out.
Yeah. So they asked me if we can change the date, and I was like, yeah, I'm here, so just tell me when.
A few more days by the beach, mate.
Yeah,
it's not bad,
exactly,
eh?
Exactly. So now we're doing the first gig was supposed to be at La Brisa, but they also changed the location because they were scared about the rainy season of the rain, and so they changed it to a new club called Envy. And we've been there before, and we checked the club, and the club is insane. Like, it's super, it's a really beautiful place, and the ceiling is amazing because you have like a lot of projectors, and then you can project like crazy stuff, like 3D stuff on the roof. Like, it's it's amazing. Sometimes
I've never been. It's pretty much brand new though, from what I hear.
It's brand new, yeah. Jay, when did they open up? November.
Was it really? Oh, well, there you go.
And yeah, and but I think they never had like a big opening party.
This is where you come in.
Yeah, exactly. Now the 2nd of February is the big opening party.
Right, sounds good.
Yeah, it's really nice.
But this isn't your first time in Bali. I found out before, you've been coming here since around the time I moved. So 2011, 2012?
12, 13, something like this. Yeah, because I friends of mine, a friend of mine, he arrived here 2010 or 11, I think. And then, he moved with his family here, Oliver. And he told some other friends we have in common. He told, like, hey, just come here, just check out the island. And then they came here, and a friend of mine, Strache is his name, he's also a really good friend of mine and business partner from back then, from Stuttgart, where I'm originally coming from, the southern part of Germany. So he called me. I was sitting in my apartment in Germany, so he would just call me on Skype. And I just wanted to go to bed because it was like 3 in the morning. And then he was just showing me around, like, you know, like, hey, look, I'm here in Bali, you have to come here, man, it's amazing, a lot of cool people here, blah blah blah. And I was like, okay, let's do it. So yeah. I arrived here, and I was, the first time I came here, I was here for like 3 weeks, and then it was so good, I was really impressed. So 3 months later, I think in April, I just came back for another 3-4 weeks. And then I fell in love with the island.
Well, that's the thing. When you come in this far, especially from places like Germany or anywhere in Europe, yeah, it makes sense to stay a little bit longer. Otherwise, if you're going to stay for a week, you lose 2 days traveling, the jet lag and everything else. Sure. So
yeah, it makes no sense. It has to at least 10 days or 2 weeks at least.
Just not 10 days in Ubud, because you're going to get bored after 2 days.
Yeah, Ubud is the friends I mentioned, they just build up like a community housing kind of thing in Ubud with 10 amazing villas, and they also have like a recording studio there.
Oh, nice.
From maybe the biggest rap pop star we have in Germany, called Crow, and he built up his studio there also. And yeah, I mean, it's nice there, it's nice to be there, but if you're like into yoga and spiritual stuff, then this is your place.
Is that your thing, is it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm more like the sunshine, beach.
Same.
You know, it's more my thing. And but I mean, to be honest, when you go to Ubud for like 2-3 days, it's super nice and super chill. But after the 4th day, it's like, okay, can we just do something different?
Get back down to the beach.
Yes.
So, speaking of beaches, you're from Germany. There's not much beach and sun going on there, especially in the winter time around this time of year.
No.
How was your upbringing in Germany? Was you always into music, or did it kind of develop as you got a lot older? How did it develop with you?
The music?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. The thing is, when I was 3, no, my 4th birthday, the first present I can remember was the Michael Jackson Thriller LP. And this present, my uncle gave me this present, because my uncle was at that time a DJ. So he was like my role model, you know, and I was like, wow, what he's doing is like amazing. And my father was used to play drums in a band back then in the 70s. My grandfather was playing a kind of a guitar called saz, is a Turkish guitar. So my parents coming from Turkey, and so I was surrounded by music all the time. So and then I found out that I'm like very into hip hop music back then, like when I was 12, 13, 14. And then I start to collect money to get my first record player. And then my mom was just sponsoring the other one. So I had proper equipment at home and set up at home. And then I started with 14 to play like youth clubs, school parties. You know.
Always hip hop at this time?
At this time, it was when I was like 12, 14, it was like the pop music back then, like, you know, all the 90s stuff with like Wakefield, you know, and Snap and, you know, all this stuff.
I know it well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I still love this music. And yeah, then when I get a little bit older, like 16, 17, I just found out like, okay, hip hop is my thing. So a friend of mine was introducing me to to the first Wu-Tang album, A Tribe Called Quest, Busta Rhymes, KRS-One, all these Bad Boy stuff, Biggie, and all this stuff. Yeah, and then I was totally in love with hip hop, but also I was checking out electronic music, like not really crazy, you know, like super deep and digging, but just when I, for example, when I went to the when I was at the record store, I was buying my stuff, like my hip-hop stuff, and I was just checking like, okay, what's new on the electronic music thing, you know. And I was just also buying some records, but I was more into hip-hop, but I was not like a, you know, I didn't have like this cover on my.
You didn't have tunnel vision. You were
exactly, exactly. Yeah. So I was just checking all the time, like, okay, what's new, what's cool, what's going on, you know.
So when you 16, 17 started DJing, you were a DJ way before you were a producer. Is that right?
Yes, yes, yes.
And then when did you kind of believe that you could start doing it for a living? Because most people, they DJ maybe Friday and Saturday. Mm. But then most of the time they still have a 9-to-5. When did it kind of change for you?
Actually, I did an internship at a place called Benstown Records, Benstown Studios. It was the recording studios back then in Stuttgart. My mentor was at that time DJ Tomila. And this guy, he's like super, at that time he was very, very famous in Germany. Plus he teamed up with another guy called Michi Beck, and they were like a DJ duo called themselves Turntable Rocker, and they had like big hits in Germany and Austria, Switzerland, and they were touring, and you know, and these guys also they are from hip hop, they come from hip hop, but also they changed their style into like electronica back then, like 2000, 2001. Mm-hmm. And then this was like the, I think also like a door opener, just to, you know, I was into this kind of music, but this, when you have like your mentor, he's doing this stuff, you know, and it's like, ah, cool, maybe I should go more this kind of
way. Let me just go and have a look. Let me see what's happening.
So, like I told you, it was an internship, so I learned a lot there. And then I don't know, I think it was 2000, I think. We were in the studio working, and then we had two girls called a girl group called Dynasty, and they needed a remix. And I was like, hey, I can do one if you want. So at that time, I had other AKA as a hip hop guy. I called myself DJ Passion. And then it was my first remix was on their single as a DJ Passion remix, and for the payment or the fee for this remix was an MPC. So Tomila was like, "Hey, you want to have my MPC? I don't want to use it anymore. So I'm more into like the Logic thing." And I was like, "Hell yeah! So give me that
signed,
signed." So I started to do beats with the MPC, like for 4 years, 5 years.
How old would you have been at this time?
22. And then, yeah, and then I did a lot of hip-hop stuff with hip-hop artists in Germany. And then in 2005, I changed completely to Logic, because you know when you're super into like a drum machine or like the MPC, then you don't want to really change. Like it's like, this is my baby. I want to do this.
Couldn't
I
want to
do music with. Yeah, exactly. And then I changed the Logic, and I used actually Logic 10 years till 2000. Yeah, from 2014, and in 2014 I changed to Ableton.
Oh yeah.
Actually, I think it's for me now, and for this kind of music I'm doing right now, is Ableton.
Is it just the speed of which you can get things up and running that you prefer in Ableton, or
everything? It's so simple, man. It's insane. A friend of mine, he showed me how to work with Ableton. The first thing is like, you have to love also like the cover of the you know what you see. Mm-hmm. Because when you're so into like Logic and you know exactly where is what, you know what to click when, and you know how to work with it, and then you change to Ableton, it's the first 2-3 days I was like, oh god, what the hell.
I think the session view is a real asset to Ableton, because it's completely different, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah, exactly. And then, but then I just figured out that it's so simple and so quick to produce music, like, and you have a lot of crazy items and stuff, like how you load samples into your session and stuff. It's was mind-blowing, and I was like, okay, that's enough Logic, thank you.
I'm moving to
the next one.
So the name, then, there's an elephant in the room here. So Nine Toes,
yeah,
how did you get the name? Is it the obvious answer? Do you have nine toes? Or
look, tell the people now, do I have nine toes or not?
He's got nine toes. He really has got nine toes. So it's not even a funny name then, is it? It literally is right on the money.
Exactly.
Unbelievable. I never would have guessed. Well, yeah, that's a pretty easy answer to the question that everyone's been thinking for years and years and years.
Yeah, the name is it's super simple. I had an accident when I was 5. And it was squeezed. My big right toe was squeezed into a hydraulic system. Yeah, it was a big pain. And then they tried to fix it. Like they tried everything in the hospital. But after 2 weeks, when they removed the cover on my foot, my big right toe was black. Like the body couldn't. Reattach it. And so the doctors told my parents, like, okay, we have to remove the big right toe, because otherwise I could get gangrene.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So they had to do it. So when I was 5 and after the surgery, they teach me again how to walk, because you need the big one and the smallest one, mm-hmm, for your balance.
Right.
So, yeah, but actually I can't remember a lot, because I was, like I told you, I was 5. So after the surgery, so they teach me again how to walk and stuff. So I never had like difficulties, or, you know, I was playing football. I made a lot of sports. So you can't even see it, you know. So I mean, I'm wearing flip flops, as you can see, but like not from between the first one and the second. It's like between the second
and the
third.
The next one,
yeah, exactly. So everything is possible.
It is. Well, obviously, if you can do, it sounds strange to say, but I would imagine that if that's going to happen to somebody, it's probably the best age it can happen to, because you've learned everything from them, and now it's not even an issue. You're walking fine,
exactly.
You can play sports,
yeah, exactly,
you can do everything.
Exactly. I think if it would be in my mid 20 years or something like this, it would be very difficult, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to learn again to walk, because it's not that easy.
Well, look, I've got to ask, when and why did you decide to associate that name with your music?
So, yeah, I just wanted to tell you. So, going back to this internship at Bandstown Records, Dance Down Studios. When these two guys came up with the idea to play more like electronica music, I was like, hey man, cool. I also would try it. So I wanted to do a record mixtape for myself. And I did it actually, and it was also summer, and I had also flip-flops on my feet. And Tomila was like, okay, cool. So I recorded it, and he was recorded it on his computer. And he was like, how should I call it? Like, is it like a DJ Passion electronic music mixtape, or what should I do? Or how should I call it? And I was like, at that time it was a little bit tricky to be a hip hop DJ, you know, and do like music like this. And I was like, hey, maybe I call it differently, you know, I just give it a new AKA or a new name. And then he said, yeah, Kiel, what kind of name? Do you have another one in spare? Or do you have anything?
Any ideas?
I was just sitting like exactly like this. He was talking to me, and then I was just looking down to my feet, and I was like, hey, let's call it Banto. And this name was born.
And the rest is history.
Exactly.
What a story. No, but it is amazing how you can be so open and just laugh about it. You know, it is exactly what it is. I thought there was going to be a whole backstory, and it wasn't actually that you had nine toes, and it was because of this and that. But no, it is actually exactly what you would imagine. It is, you know.
It's so funny. Everywhere, every time people asking me the same question.
Well, now the world knows,
And then after I'm telling the story, like, okay, I have nine toes. They're like, can I see it? It's like, dude, I can't put out my feet now, my foot now. Just go on my Instagram. I have some.
You should have it as your screensaver on your phone. Just hold your phone up so they can see it.
Yeah, I should. Probably.
Everyone can see it. Or even those 3D mappings that the club's going to have on Sunday. You can just maybe put something up there so they all know. They can all see it then.
Let's see.
So, production-wise, you've taken on the moniker of Nine Toes. If we were to fast forward a little bit to 2013, mm-hmm. obviously, huge hit record, which we can get to. Had you been producing much records leading up to that under Nine Toes? And how did you find your career starting out to the huge explosion that was Finder?
I think it was in 2010. I was playing hip hop in a club, and at that time, I don't know, it was a bit boring actually. I was a bit bored because I felt like, hey, it's always the same music and there's nothing fresh, new coming out anymore. And then I was 32, and when you're in a club and then, you know, you have like 18 years old girls twerking and dancing, I mean it's good to see, but I was a bit bored actually. So, and then I was starting just to make some edits of tracks I was love to listening to or I was playing to. So, and then I called them Nine Toes Edits because they were more like disco-ish, house-ish kind of music. And and then I started to do some edits, and then with some friends, we had this idea to do Wednesdays, really small disco house, deep house party in Stuttgart in a very cool venue called Delilah. It's actually a bar, but the owner is a friend of mine. He's like, he's crazy when it comes to like good sound system. You know, he was just using a Rodec mixer, for example. He was super into like a good sound, so he had an amazing sound system down there. And then I asked him like, hey, is it possible to do like weekly party here? And he was like, yeah, sure. So then I started to do with some friends end of 2010 till end of beginning of 2013. I was doing this party, and this party was like also kind of a door opener, because you know I had some guest DJs there playing, and then I had to check and be like up to date with music, because you can't play like always the same stuff. So and then so it was a good switch, like a healthy switch, you know, like a smooth switch from this hip hop thing, what was going on, to the electronic music side, you know. And to that, at that time in 2009, I still have a DJ duo called Bass Il Euro with my roommate Chovy. We produced 2009 a track for Pitbull for his album in 2009. It was also a coincidence. We were playing in Würzburg, in a city in Germany. And Pitbull was in the same hotel, because he was playing also in a club there, I don't know. And his manager or his booker at that time, he was a business partner with my DJ colleague. So he was like, hey, I'm here in the same hotel. We are in the same hotel. Let's meet up tomorrow for having breakfast. So we met him, the management and DJ guys from Pitbull himself, super cool guy. He asked us for music, so we gave him a USB stick with like three or four tracks, and he picked one. So plus he featured us on his album, and it was really cool back then. And then in 2010 I started this what was it? I can't even remember the party in fact.
This is your Wednesday night in Stuttgart.
What was it? It was...
It'll come back to you.
Anyway. So, while I was playing these parties, the Pitbull guys came back again, and they asked for another music in 2011, because they wanted to do an album for Pitbull only in Spanish. In that time, Pitbull was just sampling like 90s, you know, classics. And then we were thinking about what we should do, what kind of music. So we were like, okay, it should be a 90s song and a Spanish song. It was Macarena. So we took Macarena, we made a hip hop beat out of it. Plus, I was like, there's a sample I have on my laptop for years, and this was this Finder sample. Mm-hmm. I was like, maybe I should do this for him as a instrumental, and I produced it on 110 BPM. We sent them to Pitbull, and Pitbull picked the Macarena one, and it was the intro of his album in 2012, I think.
And was that Macarena one? That was a hip hop one.
Between the genres. Exactly, it was a 110. It was like a bit forward to the floor, but it was still hip hop ish. But I think he was like, "Ah, no, I will just take the hip hop."
You go with what he knows.
Exactly. And then I was like, "Okay, I have this track I produced." The track, I don't know even the name back then. I just called it like Pitbull 2 or Pitbull 3, you know, like the working title.
Yeah.
So, but then I started to play this track on my parties, because it was fitting very well to the other stuff I played back then, you know. So the thing is, it was a bit too slow, so I had to speed it up a bit. So it ended up with 117 BPM, I think. And every time when I was playing this track, like every time, so many people came and were asking like, hey man, what is this track? And we had some party people, they came like every week, and they knew every time when I was mixing this track, they were like, yeah, and shouting. And, you know,
sign of a good record when people know it's mixing in,
exactly.
You know?
Exactly. And then I was like, okay, wait a second. I mean, this is when I'm playing this track, every time people going crazy.
People are losing their shit every
exactly.
week.
So I should do something with it, maybe release it or whatever. And then in 2012, coincidentally, I met Martin Eira. He's one of the label owners of Kling Klong Records and a really good and old friend of mine, because I know him for now 20 years, because he was playing trance in the same club on a Saturday when I was playing Friday hip hop in the same club. Mm-hmm. So that's why I know him. And then I just finished a hip hop set. I went out the club, and then some friends, like drunk, they were like, "Yeah, let's go to Martin Eira, because his party starts every time at 5 or 6 in the morning, in a legendary club called Climax in Stuttgart." And then we went. We were walking to the club, and then I saw Martin on in front. He was talking to some people, and then he was like, "Hey man, how you doing? Long time no see, blah blah." What's going on? What's tell me? And I told him, like, hey, I have one track. I made one track, but I really don't know what to do with it. Like, which label? You know, I'm not really good to, like, I know, like, the big ones. Okay, this label belongs to this guy, and mm-hmm. this is this crew. But like, I didn't know to what to do with this track, to which label should I send the track, yeah. You know? So he was like, yeah, okay, I can listen to the track if you want. And then I was like, yeah, and you're doing mixing and mastering, so if it's cool and if you have the time, it would be so nice if you could, like, put your fingers,
yeah.
Do some magic.
The magic touch.
Exactly. And he was like, yeah, sure, just send me the track. 2 days later, I think, he sent me the master file, and it was amazing. It sounded, was dope, you know, it was really nice. 2 days later, he called me. He was like, what's up with the song? I said, nothing. I don't know which label and stuff. Maybe you can help me out. And then he was like, let's do it on Kling Klong. Let's do it on my label, on my imprint. And then I was like a bit strange, because for me, his label was and is still like more tech house and techno kind of music. Mm-hmm. And he was like, no, it's a good proper house track. Let's do it. I can feel it's a good one. I was like, okay, cool. So he signed it. He released it in April 2013, first on vinyl. And in May, it was released on Beatport and other digital platforms.
Maybe in the start of the Ibiza season as well.
Exactly. And then the funny thing is, the release day, I was here in Bali. It was so funny. I was here chilling in Seminyak, in Uluwatu, sorry, in Uluwatu. A friend of mine, he was living in the villa there. I was in the pool. And then my phone was ringing, and then the release day was here. 1 week later, I was in the pool. My phone was ringing, and Rainer, the other guy from Kling Klong, he was like, "Did you check your emails?" And I was like, "No, I'm in holiday. I didn't open up my laptop for, like, I don't know, 5-6 days." And it was like, "Dude, check your emails." I said, okay. So I checked my emails, and then he sent me a screenshot of DJ DE, Dex DE, like, you know, these, and you know, and all these vinyl platforms. And the record was within 1 week, everywhere on number one. Within 1 week.
And you didn't even know? You're in the pool.
I didn't know. And I was like, what is this? Is this a joke, or is that... Dude, your record is everywhere, sold out, and it's fucking number one. And I was like, what? Like, yeah, man, just check your emails. And then So they had to repress it within one month because it was everywhere sold out. And he was like, hey man, this is like we running this label for like 10 years. We never had this before.
Yeah, this doesn't happen.
Yeah. So that was like a moment. I was like, oh wow, nice. So not bad. So and then. In May, June, every day when I woke up and then like random people I didn't know just sent me like text messages, pictures, videos of someone in Ibiza playing my track. You know, like, hey, this guy was playing a track. Hey. And then, Carl Cox was playing your check. Hey, this guy was playing. I was like, what's going on?
It's called unreal. Fire.
Yeah, it's unreal. And then it blew up and it became like the summer anthem of 2013.
Well, I believe it was the most Shazammed track in Ibiza from that year. Which is an incredible
achievement. Like, we had no expectations, you know, like zero, zip, nada, nothing. It was just like, hey, let's try it out. Let's press 500 or 1,000, I don't know, records and let's see what happens, you know?
Well, I've released samples, and some allegedly, this is allegedly, some have gone without sample clearance from other aliases, not mine, obviously. And some have been gone down the right channels where you've got permission from the band, etc. Do you know if Kling Klong found it difficult to release because it was heavily sampled, or is this something that you've had?
No. So we cleared everything, but. At the beginning, it was a really pain in the ass, actually, because the story behind the sample is this. A guy called Ralph McDonald, he is the guy who played the original song in 1977, like the melody and everything. 1 year later, 1978, an African band called Concept Neuf covered the track and made the version which I sampled. So I thought, and everyone thought, that the original one was
Concept Neuf,
The Path. That this is the track name. So the story. I have to go back like 6 months before when Kling Klong was signed. When Kling Klong signed the track. They never asked me if it was a sample or not. And I never told them, because as a hip-hop guy, you know, hip-hop is sampling.
The whole world is
exactly
around
so
samples.
Normally you don't tell. Since someone comes and like try to sue you or whatever, you know. So I didn't tell them, they didn't ask me. So it was like a secret, like no one wanted to talk about kind of thing. Then Rainer, the other guy from Kling Klong, he called me. He was like, man, Sony UK wanna sign or re-sign the Finder. So I have to know if you sampled it or not, or did you play everything by your own? And I was like, we have to fix the mic first. So yeah.
That would be good.
And he was like, so tell me, is it a sample or what is it? And I was like, of course it's a sample. And he was like, yeah, why you didn't tell me that? I said, you never asked?
Yeah, you don't ask. That's it.
You never asked. So, and then he was like, oh, fuck. The Sony guys will really sign it. And okay, now we have to have a plan B if we can check out who's like the right holder of the song. So I went to the studio again with a crazy musician, and he covered
the cover.
So he was playing exactly like everything the same, and then it came out again like the remastered version. So when you have the first pressing of the vinyl, you have the original version, and when you have the remastered, you have the cover version. But
it's cover version.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, I can hear it, but the rest of the no one really, I think, can listen.
Can't tell the difference.
No, can't tell the difference exactly. So Then I sent Rainer, the guy from Kling Klong, I sent him a YouTube link with the original. I thought that this is the original. And he tried to figure out who is like the right holder. So who got the publishing and stuff. he's like really good. When it comes to this kind of stuff, Rainer is like on point.
Mm-hmm.
He was searching for 1 month. Like crazy.
No answers.
And then he finally find out that I sampled the cover version and the original one is not Concept Nerf, it's Ralph McDonald. And the funny thing is that the guys from Concept Nerf, they only made one album or two albums and then they split. The record label they were releasing, they shut down. No one was reachable. All these guys from Concept Nerf died, so there was nothing to get. You know, it was like a one. How you say that? Like a dead end.
Literally.
Yeah, literally. And so, and then.
But if they're all dead, they can't claim public. Or maybe if the label's gone as well, I guess.
Man, the thing was that the record was out since March 13. We're talking about August 13. Like, the season is almost over. Everybody's going nuts and we don't know how to clear the dude. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and then we finally find out. And Ralph McDonald also died. And the only one who was in charge or who was... registered as like the owner of the rights, exactly, was a niece of him somewhere in the States. So Rainer contacted her and told her like, hey, there's a song of your uncle. And we found out that you have the rights of the song and we sampled the song and now we covered it and you will get a lot of money in the next months. And she was like...
Sign here.
Yeah, sign here. And she was like, yeah, no problem. So it was fixed within like 2 hours, everything. We had like 1 month like going nuts. Everybody went crazy. But then in two hours, she was like, okay, where should I sign? Boom, that's it, you know?
Job done.
Exactly.
Panic so, over.
Panic over, exactly. Oh, man. So, this is the final story.
And what a story. So after all the highs and lows concerning the release, how did it...
Highs and toes.
Highs and toes. How did it impact your career then? Because I'm assuming it's completely skyrocketed from there, but you weren't dealing with... You didn't have a manager at the time, right? And agents and so on. So how did all that come into play?
Nothing. It was... at that time I was still playing hip-hop, you know? I was... The people in Ibiza were like going nuts on the track I produced, and I was still, you know, doing my thing, playing hip hop stuff, and hip hop shows all around Germany or in Europe. At some point, again, Rainer called me, and it was end of the summer. It was like end of August, I think, and he was like, "Man, listen, you just have to." He said, after the season ends on the island, a new life will start for you. Like a new journey will start for you. And I was like, really? He said, man, listen, trust me. When the season is over, everybody will, like every promoter or like music lover or whatever, they will search after you and they will book you.
Yeah, so, just don't die.
Yeah, so just be aware that something new will start. And I was like, okay, cool. I mean, I'm in the scene. I was in the scene for like, a DJ, professional DJ. I started 99 as a professional DJ. So it was almost like more than 15, 16 years. So I was like, okay, cool.
Comfortable with it all.
Easy, yeah. The first... request came on the 1st of September. Then the other requests came the 2nd of September. then I had within 1 week a completely full September booking, like a schedule, complete full with Nine Toes bookings, and I had to cancel all my hip hop bookings because all my hip hop bookings, I had hip hop bookings full till December, and I was calling my other colleagues, my other guys, the hip hop guys. I was like, hey man, I can't do the show. Can you please go there and play? Hey, can you play? So I had to manage my hip hop shows. You know what I mean? It was super crazy. And then, I started to travel.
So in the September, you're dealing with all your own bookings, I'm assuming.
It was me dealing by myself. And then, I mean, I was used to dealing by myself for myself when I was playing hip hop. It was normal to, you know, in this hip hop scene, everyone knows everyone. So when you know someone is calling you and he want to book you, you know, okay, this is like you can trust this guy. You don't need any contract or whatever. He says, okay, this date, this is your fee. Boom, that's it. You know, you go there, play, you get your money, and that's it. And but then it was like everything, like I had one show or two shows in Germany and the rest was London, Athens, Malta, you know, like international stuff. And I was like, okay, I think I need someone to help me out. And then again, Martin Ira, he called me and he said, hey, they just open up a booking agency called Still Hot. And the booker is Benny, and he's also a DJ, and he was managing a club back then in Tübingen. It's a smaller place close to Stuttgart, and he's like the man. He knows everything about business and bookings and stuff, and if you want, he can do your bookings, and he also can help you a little bit of, you know, like the management stuff if you want. And I was like, yeah, let's do it. So he started to do my bookings October 13 till December 2016. Sorry. So in January 2017, I changed my agency, and I'm now at Times Artist, the agency of Matthias Tanzmann and André Kwas.
Shout out to those guys.
Yeah, but.
So are you ever going to go back to your hip-hop roots, or is this it now?
I still play hip-hop shows. Mm-hmm. When I have the time, and when I know it's a good party, and I know the promoters, or, you know, if I don't know, that I just call some guys or friends, I'm just checking out who these guys are, and when they tell me, like, hey, it's a cool party, I do it. But this is like every 3 months, maybe one show. Back then, I had like 14, 16 shows a month as a hip-hop guy. So, you know, like, how the table turns.
Yeah. Did you find it at all difficult still doing your hip-hop gigs, being booked for all these brand new overseas shows on the back of Finder? Did you find it at all difficult playing a completely house set to accommodate your own track and things that you were working on and stuff like that?
No.
No?
No.
Everything was just completely seamless.
Yeah.
What a man. Just easy, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's everything is freestyle. So even, I never did a set before I played. Never. I mean, so I do like newer tracks on a folder, but I would never do like a set, because the thing is, it's like also when you go and play a hip hop set, you walk inside a club or somewhere or to a party, first you have to read the audience. You have to be there for at least 30 minutes just to check out the vibe and everything, you know? And then you can decide what kind of music you play. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And sometimes it helps also when you talk to the promoters first, when you go to dinner with them or whatever, just listen to them, what they're talking about, like, hey, who played before, and, you know, what kind of sound. At the end, of course, you have your own touch. You play like your own the music you like, you know. But sometimes I had like crazy situations. I was in Hamburg, and I didn't know what kind of club it was. Then I went inside, and my warm up, he was playing proper techno music, like really proper techno Berkan music, with 132 BPMs, and I was like
really?
You gotta follow this.
I asked the promoter. I was like, I mean, it's not a big deal. It's not a problem. I can play music like this because I have music like this. I have everything. My repertoire is like super big, you know. And he was like, yeah, I heard. He was like, I heard one set of you, and it was like proper techno music, and I was like, which set is it? I was like, yeah, I don't know. I found it somewhere on SoundCloud, and it was like very nice and very hard. And I was like, okay, I don't know which set you mean, but yeah, okay, cool. So I was there, and I speeded it down a bit, like 128, and I was still playing for like 4 hours, proper techno music. And after that, so many people came and they were like, hey, we didn't know that you play music kind of music like this, because we saw your name on the flyer, on the poster, and we were like, should we go there? Because yeah, it's house music, it's in this kind of club, it's boring, and this is not the booking doesn't fit, actually, blah blah. And after that, they were like, man,
some new fans.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how to do it. So from following on from the success of Finder, did you feel pressurized to follow it up?
No.
Not at all?
No. So after Finder, the next release was 1 year later because of that. Because everyone was just looking on my fingers like, okay, what's next? Is he releasing? Like, what's the next move? Blah, blah. So I was just like, hey, just I have Finder. Just wait. Because I have to learn this new environment where I'm now, you know, what kind of, you know, the travel, meeting people, checking new music. And this is, I needed the influence just to make a new output. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, and the thing is, I don't really like this. We talked about Wickfield and, you know, Two Unlimited and Snap. These guys, they had this scheme, like when you have like a, this works, never change a winning team kind of thing. So yeah. Okay, just take the same drums, everything the same, just change the melody, and then you have another hit. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
It's like everyone was doing it back then. So I didn't want to do this. Like, okay, just take the same drums and take another steel drum sound and make instead of din din din, make like dun dun dun. Like, come on, this is like, that's not me. You know what I mean? This is so stupid.
And
yeah, exactly. And a lot of people doing this, and a lot of people are still successful with this. But I mean, they have their audience, and the audience is like, sometimes they just wanna have this what they really know. You know what I mean?
If it's not you, it's not you. So
exactly. So and then. I was, so the second release was also on Kling Klong, and it was Escape. And Escape was like the completely opposite of Finder. It was techy, it was dark, still melody, but it was like 4 to the floor. It has nothing to do with Finder. And this was like exactly what I wanted.
What you wanted,
exactly.
Yeah.
And it came out, and then like people who were like really respected, and they came like, okay, this dude, he knows what he's doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was a really, really cool moment, actually.
So, moving into 2018, mm-hmm. What's next for you? Anything on the back burner that you can tell us some world exclusives about? Or?
Yes, yes. So, I think this year will be my busiest year. I'm now, not now because I'm on Bali chilling, but after Bali, it's after the tour, it's a very, very busy year, because I have every month I have a release. So it starts with EP called Big Boy on Groove, on Jack Masters label, including a Davide Scilacci remix. Then in March, my new Moon Harbor single coming out, a two-tracker, and I have two remixes. One remix is Matthias Tanzmann, and the other one is Howard Bass. And in April, we have the 5th anniversary of Finder, and we will do a remix package. And I would love to tell you who is doing the remixes, but I can't because I have to wait. But honestly, guys,
it's going to be worth the wait.
Trust me, these two remixes, insane.
Well, listen, I think we should end it there and just leave the listeners on a cliffhanger. But listen, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
And best of luck at the gig this weekend.
Thank you.
And whenever you're in town, please get in touch and we can always hang out.
Of course, of course. And just one more info. In May, hopefully, I will come up with my own imprint. Hopefully.
There you go. Is that a world exclusive?
This is a world exclusive.
There we go. That's why we're here. Fireworks.
Fireworks.
Thank you, Woz. Really appreciate it.
Bring the champagne inside, please.
if the listeners want to follow you on all your socials, what are they? How can they find you?
Just go where you want, like Twitter, Facebook, SoundCloud, Instagram, Snapchat. It's always Ninetoes78.
There you go. Sorted. All right, guys. Thanks very much. And I'll see you on the next one.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, mate. So there you have it, folks. That was Act Like a DJ. Check out Act Like a DJ on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. And make sure you subscribe if you liked the show. See you on the next one.